This is Insurance Marketing with John Carroll, episode 21. Let's rock.
Welcome to Insurance Marketing with John Carroll, your resource for marketing ideas, sales tips, and business strategies that help agents like you survive and thrive. And now your host, John Carroll.
Hello and welcome to another fun, exciting, and just incredibly spectacular episode of Insurance Marketing with John Carroll. I am John Carroll, and this is the podcast that's all about helping insurance agents, insurance producers, and anybody in the insurance sales industry to be more successful with their sales and their marketing and everything else that goes along with running an insurance agency. Speaking of running an insurance agency, one of the most important things in every agent's job or business owner's job is hiring the best possible people. In fact, when I used to have a job where I worked as a traveling consultant for insurance agents, and I used to work with hundreds of different insurance agents. And one of the things that I always was interested in is I was always trying to crack the code of what is that one factor that all of the successful agents have and none of the unsuccessful agents have. And every time I thought it was one thing, I would find somebody who kind of broke that mold, and I would think it was something else, and I would think it was something else. And one of the conclusions that I came to is that, you know, there's a good insurance agent can come in a lot of different packages, but there is one factor that 99% of the best agents had and 99% of the worst agents did not have, and that is the ability to hire the best people. Without a doubt, that is the most important thing, at least in my experience, of seeing what made agents successful versus not successful. So I want to share with you today 25 different tips, things that you can do that will help you get the best possible people there in your agency. So without further ado, I'm going to hop right into number one. Number one is to hire young people so that you can get affordable superstars. Now, the idea here really is that, you know, I know a lot of agents, they want to see insurance experience. But the thing is that if somebody's been in the business for a long time and they're looking to you for a job, chances are one of two things. Either one, they're maybe not that good at it, right? Because wherever they were, they're not still there. Or number two, if they really are good at it, they have a better idea of what they're worth. And the best thing about young people, you know, just out of high school, just out of college, is they don't really know how worthy they are. The first job I had when I got out of college was I used to go door to door selling long distance phone service. You know, I used to go in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I would go door to door and I would knock on between 50 and 100 different businesses a day, and just over and over and over again trying to sell them long distance phone coverage. Now, honestly, I couldn't do that job right now. But back then I was 22, 21 years old, and they would give me a script and they would have me practice it, and I was gung-ho for just about anything. I would do anything that they asked me to. And those are the kind of people that I think you can get a lot out of those people. So if you want to have an agency full of superstars and you can't afford $70,000 for everybody, then you're going to have to look for those people who are missing something. And, you know, if you can identify those good people that are just missing the experience, you can get a really good situation. And also, you know, chances are with those younger people, you have more opportunity to pay them at a higher commission rate and a lower base rate because they don't have a mortgage, they don't have a family to take care of. Sometimes they still live with their parents. So you can sell that idea that they're going to be building up their own book of business. It might take them a few years, but, you know, they can come out of it. Whereas, you know, somebody who's got more bills to pay, responsibilities, you know, they can't be as flexible with stuff like that. So that was number one, is really think about hiring people who are young and people who have perhaps no insurance experience at all. It doesn't really matter. You just have to be able to relate to people and talk. Number two, speaking of being able to relate to people, the best sales personality is not what you think it is. So a lot of people, when they think, oh, you know, the good salesperson is that guy who's really extroverted, you know, the guy who, when he goes to a party, he's always the one who's telling all the jokes and everybody's kind of surrounding him. And now, I mean, I guess I got to be honest. Like, if you're one of those guys that everywhere you go, people just want to, you know, be your best friend, well, I mean, you're probably going to be a good salesperson if you commit to it. But in general, that idea that the extroverts are the best salesperson is flawed. The reason why is because extroverts are not as good as introverts or ambiverts, people who are in the middle. Extroverts are just not as good at relating to and understanding other people. And one of the jobs of a salesperson, especially in today's world, is that you have to understand, you have to be able to ask questions, you have to be able to listen, and you have to be able to frame the things that you're saying in such a way that they're going to be received well by that other person. And scientific studies show that extroverts are the worst at that, you know, because they're so busy wanting to talk and care about what they do that a lot of times they're not really good. So there have been some really good, well-defined studies that have shown that, you know, you don't want a really introverted person, but that person you think is going to be great at sales is not necessarily that person. It's really that person who can stand in the middle, who's not afraid to pick up the phone and do a cold call, but at the same time, somebody that can listen and ask questions and relate to other people and really conversate with them in a back and forth type of way. That's the people who are going to sell the most, especially in today's world where people don't want to be badgered by, you know, one of these sales guys. It's so frustrating. You know, people aren't going to deal with that. So anyways, that was number two, is don't think that just because somebody is real talkative and extroverted that they're going to be good. You might find some good people in the middle there somewhere. Number three, don't hire for a license. This is one of the biggest mistakes I've ever seen. You know, if you want to hire the right person, and, you know, I mean, it's already a limited pool of people who are going to work in an insurance agency to begin with. And if you're just looking for people who already have a license, I mean, it's silly. And licenses are not as hard as they used to be. In most states, you can get a license online in like 2 weeks. That's how I've gotten all my licenses, is just by doing a class online. And if somebody is really committed, they'll be able to do it. And if they're not able to do it, then maybe that's a good, what's the word? I don't know, a good way to filter out people who can't do it, you know? So that's one of the things, you know, if you're only looking at people with a license, then you're really only looking at, you know, under 1% of the population. You're missing out on all the best people. I promise you, you can get a license within a month if you go online. Number four, hire people who are close to your agency, physically close. You know, when you think about the difference between somebody who who lives 45 minutes away or somebody who lives right down the street, right? The guy that lives right down the street, he's going to know more local people. He's going to have more conversations where he can drive people over to the agency to get a quote or to buy insurance or whatever. The guy who's close to the agency is more likely to go to that community event at 6 o'clock in the evening. He's more likely to make that extra phone call at 5:15 after the agency is closed because he's not looking at a 45-minute drive ahead of him. You know, he doesn't have to deal with all the car trouble and all that kind of stuff of having to drive and sit in traffic. If the weather's bad, he's more likely to be there. That person who's close to your agency is going to be less stressed because they don't have to deal with the drive all the time. Now, if there's somebody who's great and they're 45 minutes away and they're committed to it, you know, I mean, there's a lot of factors here, but when you can get somebody close to the agency, everything else being equal, I would take that person closer to the agency 10 out of 10 times. Tip number five is to find a way that you can try a new employee before you buy the new employee. You know, when you bring on a new employee, it's a huge commitment. And there's very little correlation between the way people present themselves in a job interview and the way they actually work in the real world. So if you can find a way to bring somebody on for like a project or even like as a commission only for a temporary period of time, it's almost like giving yourself the opportunity to interview them over the period of a long period of time. And, you know, I know a lot of agents who've been fooled by somebody who can interview well, but is just not a good employee. So if there's any way you can bring them on as an independent contractor, you know, pay them with a 1099 or anything like that before you commit to that full-time job, it's definitely something that I would recommend. Number six is, if you're interviewing people, this is the question that I want you to ask. I think it is the best possible question. The question is this: what's the last sales or self-improvement book that you've read? And I love this question because it tells you one of two things. Number one, is this somebody who's actually interested in being successful and they're willing to invest in themselves to do that? Because that's the type of person that I want in my agency. That's the type of person that I need to be successful in the sales business, especially the insurance sales business. The other thing you'll learn is you might find out if they're really good at kind of making up good answers. You know, so if you have somebody, so, you know, if you ask them what's the last self-improvement book or the last sales book you read and they lie, but they give you a really believable lie, well, what the heck? That's a good skill too. I mean, that's a lot of sales is being able to kind of fake it until you make it. So I think that it's like a win-win asking that question. What's the last sales or self-improvement book that you've read? And it's an interesting question to think right now. What would you answer right now if you and I were face-to-face instead of talking through earphones or whatever right now? How would you answer that question? I guess maybe you could say the last self-improvement thing you did was listen to this podcast, I hope. Number seven is to try to pay your employees as close to 100% commission as possible. You are in a 100% commission business, right? I mean, most likely you are. I mean, depending if you're an insurance agent. And, you know, sometimes you have these producers and they want to negotiate the salary to get a higher base and a lower commission. And to me, every time an agent tells me somebody wants to do that, I usually recommend you should counter with the opposite. So offer them even lower base, but twice as much commission. But the key thing is as close as you can get to 100% commission as possible. The ideal situation is 100% commission. The worst possible situation is no commission. So try to orient your structure as close as possible, 100%. Even if it's like your secretary or receptionist or somebody that doesn't have a role directly involved in sales, they still do. Your whole agency is a sales organization. So that was number seven. Number eight kind of goes along with this, but the real idea is to match the commission structure that you have as closely as possible to your own. So if you get paid more when people sell car insurance than if they sell renter's insurance, then make sure that you're rewarding your people in the same way. I've seen a lot of agencies that are not successful because the salespeople are going after something different than what the owner of the business really needs to go after. So you want to match that commission structure as much as possible to your own. Number nine, I kind of already talked about this, but number nine is to just be real wary about people who want more base and less commission. A good salesperson, every time, the good salesperson, the confident salesperson is going to want more opportunity for commission and less base. So if they ask you for the reverse, you know, that might just be a red flag. To me, it probably is almost a deal breaker. Not to say that those aren't good people, but you don't need good people. You need salespeople. So that was number nine. Number 10 is just to be on the lookout everywhere you go. There's no reason why you can't pull somebody who is pumping your gas at the gas station. I mean, anybody can learn our business. So if you talk to somebody and they have good customer service skills, good speaking skills, they're personable, it doesn't matter where they are. They could be at the drive-thru of the restaurant. But you know, wherever you see people, have a card ready to go that you could hand to people potentially to work at your agency. And you know, the good thing is if you take somebody off of you know, the used car lot, or you take them off of you know, a retail job at the mall and you bring them into your agency, it's like a step up. And what you don't want is to hire people that are stepping down into your position. That's a bad situation. You only want to hire people to step up. That's maybe 10.5. That's not on my list here, but it's you hire people that are stepping up into your position, not the other way around. Number 11 is to hire part-time workers that are already working somewhere else. So there's a lot of people who are, say, like a real estate agent, or you know, maybe they work at a boatyard or an ATV. I mean, there's just a lot of people that you could hire as a part-time situation commission only, and especially if they already have a job where they're communicating with people that is in any way related to insurance. So, you know, don't think about, you know, your agency, oh, to be successful, I need to have two more sales producers. Because you might be able to get away with, instead of two more sales producers, you might be able to get away with hiring five or six people who have part-time jobs doing something else, but they each can deliver you, you know, three, four policies a month, maybe a policy a week. You know, each one of those people can be potentially delivering you the same thing that one person could. And you're going to get the experience, you're going to get the value of, you know, all the interactions that they're having with their other part-time job. Of course, you know, you don't want to do anything where it's a conflict of interest. So number 12 is to beware the agency jumpers. Agency jumpers are people that, it's a term that, I don't know, I'm sure I'm not the first person to say it, but I kind of think I made it up. But these are the people who pretty much their whole career is about spending about 9 to 18 months in one insurance agency and then jumping to another one and then jumping to another one. And now the thing is, that's their job, is to always jump from one agency to the next. So they're always real good at the job interviews because they know how to like talk around why they left, and they're usually pretty good at explaining why their work history is so spotty in such a way that doesn't really look bad. But these are kind of like the worst kind of people. Now, I'm not saying that good people don't wind up in bad situations, but if you've seen 3-4 agencies in the past 4 to 5 years, they should really have a really good reason, or maybe you bring them on at 100% commission, because those are oftentimes the people that are good. They're actually usually great for about 3 to 4 months. And then that's kind of when it starts to slide. And at 9 to 12 months, that's when they're spending half of their time in your agency on Facebook. And the other half of the time, they're out on monster.com or something, writing their resumes or doing this other stuff. So watch out for those folks. They're great salespeople, and they'll sell you on why you should hire them. But you just have to trust me on that one. Number 13, if you're in the market to hire somebody, ask everybody that you know. The more people you talk about it, the more opportunities you're going to have. It's just like sales. The more times you try to sell something, the more people you talk to about it, the more sales you're going to make. So, you know, the one key little point that I want to talk to you about, though, when it comes to asking people, is you want to make sure you're asking in the right way. Because when you say to most people, hey, I'm looking to hire somebody in my agency, the first thing they think of is, well, who do I know that needs a job? But that's not what you want them to be thinking. Okay. What you want to say something is, you know, something more like, you know, I'm looking for somebody who's a really hard worker that can learn fast, and somebody who's looking for, you know, a career in the financial business, likes to help people. You know, it doesn't matter if they need a job or they don't. In fact, I prefer somebody that has a job, but for them, this would be, you know, an even better job. So just be careful, because immediately people will think of everyone they know who doesn't have a job. And that's the worst pool of candidates that you want all your people to be thinking of, right? So describe for them what you're looking for, and tell them flat out that you can even tell them, I'm not hiring anybody who's unemployed. I'm only going to hire somebody who already has a job. And that way, you know, you're going to prevent that pulling from the wrong pool. That was number 13. Number 14 is to hire locals. I kind of already talked about hiring people that live close to the agency, but the idea here is hiring people that grew up by your agency. And really the thing is, it's like, you know, when they grew up here, they pretty much know everybody. When I go back to my hometown in Syracuse, New York, you know, I can't go to the mall. I can't go out to eat without seeing everybody that I went to high school with. And, you know, if I was selling insurance, every single one of those interactions would be a sales conversation. And so, you know, if everything else is equal and you're hiring one person who went to high school in your community and one person who didn't, hire that person who's from the community. Number 15, you can always throw ads up on Craigslist. They are free in most regions to put job listings on. So it's not even a bad idea. Maybe you just always, you know, once a week or every couple weeks, you throw an ad up there for a commission-only job. Because even if you feel like you're fully staffed right now, there's always room for a commission-only extra person. That was number 15. Number 16, kind of already said this, but really, you want to always be hiring, or you want to always have that hiring mindset. Don't wait until your star producer leaves to start thinking about who you could hire. You want to always be collecting resumes, always be telling people about it, because I promise you, if you find that person who's great, you can find a way to make it work. You know, but if you wait until that time when you need them, they're not going to be there. So just, you want to always have that hat on your head that says, I'm always hiring. Now, number 17, this is kind of like an interview technique, but I have seen a lot of agents who make this mistake. And let's see, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but I think a lot of agents, especially if they, you know, if they're new to being an insurance agent, they kind of like that power position. I've seen a lot of agents who came from other backgrounds that have been, you know, anytime they were on a job interview in their life, they were the one asking for the job. And now they're in this situation where they're offering a job. And I've seen agents who kind of, they like to kind of have this attitude of, well, let's see if you can prove to me that you're worth my job kind of thing. And I'm not trying to be negative here. I'm just trying to paint this picture. And that actually is not a good situation to be in, because it's not a good way to react to that situation. Because what happens is you'll wind up hiring the person who is best at selling you on themselves. But that person is not the best person for the job. The best person for the job is the person who is maybe a little bit hesitant about whether your agency is even the right place for them. The best person for the job is the one that you have to sell on why they should work with you. So when you go into this job interview, you know, if you look at it as it's their job to convince me, then you're going to wind up with, you know, the person who's best at convincing you of something. But the person who's really good isn't going to really care, because when they see that attitude with you, they're just going to be like, you know what, screw this. I'll find somewhere where they really want me, someplace where they're going to sell me on the opportunity, and I don't have to sit here and act like I'm, you know, under a heat lamp getting grilled about something. So, you know, think about your interview tactics and who's the person who's buying and who's the person that's selling. And in all honesty, you should be the one who's selling. That's the attitude that I've seen the most successful agents take, is that when they have a candidate there, they're selling. You still get to choose who you hire, but your interview is about you selling on the opportunity and very much less about them selling on why they should hire you. So, that was number 17. Number 18, this one comes from a book I read a couple years ago, or maybe I listened to it on tape. It's called The Ultimate Sales Machine by Chet Holmes. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at insurancesplash.com/21. And basically what he recommends during the interview process is to at some point say to the people, no. And now you want to be careful, because you want to say no in such a way that you're still leaving the door open. So, for example, and this is kind of like almost exactly how he says it in the book, is you would say something like, you know, I'm really impressed with everything that you're saying. It sounds like you've got a lot of good experience. But when it comes to what I'm looking for here in this agency, when it comes to being an absolute sales superstar, that's not what I'm hearing from you. And the point here is that you're not trying to shut them down, but you're trying to see how they will react to adversity. Because if you say to somebody, you know, I'm looking for a sales superstar, and that's just not what I'm hearing from you, the great salesperson is going to say, are you listening? The great salesperson is going to say, well, let me tell you why that's not true. And the person who folds is the person who's going to fold in your agency. You know, so put a little pressure on them, but don't just tell them, no, you don't have the job, because it might be a little bit, you know, a little bit over the top, and you know, you might actually weed somebody out who is still good. So you want to tell them that you're just not hearing that they're good, or you're not fully convinced, and then see how they react. That was number 18. Number 19 is, and I really have to really stress this, because I think people don't look into this enough, but you have to find some way to test people's computer skills before they go into your agency. And the reason I say this is because I used to have a job where I helped train new insurance producers on how to do quotes and do service and all this kind of stuff. And I can't tell you how many times, I mean, you would have people that they would have to type with two fingers, and they don't know that you double click on a program, but you single click on a link. And sometimes you look at somebody and you'd think, oh, this person is, they look like they're probably tech savvy. and they can't do anything on the computer. So what I recommend, and I recommend this to agents for a long time now, is, you know, you just do something simple, like you create a document, a letter, and an Excel spreadsheet, and then maybe 10 questions about that you have to use Google to find the answers to. And you just say to them, okay, I'm going to give you 25 minutes, recreate this document, recreate this spreadsheet, and then answer these 10 questions that you just use the internet to find the answers to. And it can be really simple. It doesn't have to be complicated, but you need to have a way to weed out those people who type with two fingers that can't find what they're doing. And guess what? And that might be you. Maybe you're really bad at technology, and that's fine. But if that's the case, then you sure as heck better not hire somebody who's just as bad as you, because that is the worst thing you could do as a business owner, is to surround yourself with people who have the same weakness as you. So just come up with a simple little test. You know, a Word document they have to type, a spreadsheet they have to enter some numbers into, and then they have to go out to Google and, you know, answer a couple questions by, you know, going out to floodinsurance.gov or, you know, a couple other websites, come up with some simple questions. You'll be able to tell. They don't have to be Bill Gates, but they can't be, you know, idiots when it comes to technology stuff. Or you're going to spend all your time teaching them how to send an email, and you can't afford to do that. Number 20. Look for salespeople who are not in the insurance business. You know, there's a ton of really talented salespeople that are selling knives, electronics, used cars, tires, all these different things. These are people who are good at what they do, and they've probably never even considered working in the insurance business. But, you know, you take a guy who's used to selling tires or used to selling, you know, a job that's maybe not very well esteemed in society, and you offer him a position where he gets to, you know, wear a suit and tie and dress up and look nice every day, and he's in a financial industry. You know, for a lot of these folks, this could be a really great opportunity. And when you're only trying to hire people who already have the insurance business, then, I mean, there's no appeal, there's no allure, there's no sexiness to your opportunity here. So look to hire people from outside of the insurance business. 21, if somebody has, if they can speak more languages, at least if it's a language that your clients might potentially be speaking, that's going to help you out. But you got to be careful, because it's a double-edged sword. You bring somebody on and they bring in all these new clients who can speak Cantonese, and you can't speak Cantonese, and then you lose that producer. You know, you might have a kind of a bad situation. They're going to connect a lot better with that person. So it's a double-edged sword, but it can be a real benefit. Tip number 22 to hire the best people is to use LinkedIn. Make announcements on LinkedIn that you're hiring for people. It's a good place to talk about that kind of stuff, because people have access right there in LinkedIn to all their LinkedIn connections. So they could look somebody up or share your post about the job or anything like that. Number 23 is to research your job applicants on social media. So for the most part, if somebody named Bob Smith, and it's probably a bad example because Bob Smith, there's a billion Bob Smiths, but if you go out to Google and you just type in Bob Smith Facebook, and assuming it's a name that's not as obvious as Bob Smith, there's a pretty decent chance that you're going to be able to click and go right over to their Facebook page. And pretty much all companies are doing this. I don't know if it's legal or it's not illegal, but you can look at people's Facebook page and you can get a feel. You know, I mean, if you pull up their Facebook page and it's a picture of them chugging a beer, you know, I mean, I don't know. You know, and the thing is that there's plenty of pictures of me chugging beers out in the world, but they're not my Facebook profile picture. You know, they're not out in a public place. And, you know, it says something about somebody's professionalism, how seriously they take themselves. You know, so you go out there, get a feel. Do they have kids? Do they have a family? You know, you can do all that stuff. And I like to do it on Facebook, because Facebook, they'll never find out that you looked at their page. One of the things that I don't like about LinkedIn is that LinkedIn will show you who's looking at your profile. So, like, if I'm logged into LinkedIn and I go and I looked at your LinkedIn profile, you'll actually see something on LinkedIn that says, yeah, John Carroll went and looked at you. And so, you know, I just want to make you aware of that, because if you're trying to be on the DL researching somebody's LinkedIn account, you'll have to log out first. Otherwise, they'll get a little notification that, you know, you were actually checking up on them. Although I guess it's not as big a deal. I just, I don't know. If I'm really trying to do some discreet spying, I don't ever use LinkedIn. Not that I'm like the NSA or anything, but all right. So 23, use social media to research your applicants. Number 24, this is one I've seen some bad experiences with, and this is watch out for people who are living far away from your agency and they're trying to move to your area. I've seen this happen a lot where agents get contacted by somebody who has great references, and that person says, you know, I'm moving to Cold Springs Harbor and I'm looking for a job, and, you know, can I work at your agency? 4 out of 5 times, I'm pulling that right out of my butt, but a lot of times people are basically in a situation where they can't move unless they have a job at the other side. But a lot of people kind of have that plan of, I'm going to get that job so that I can move, and that enables me to make the move and keep my paychecks going. But once I get there, I'm going to look for something better. So just be aware, I've seen a lot of people who, you know, they get hired because they move, and then they're gone within 6 months, and you don't want to do that. So the key thing is really just bring up that objection and see how they respond. You know, see what they say, and you'll get a feel for whether or not they're using you as a stepping stone or whether or not they really want to come on board with you. That was number 24. Number 25 is if you make a job advertisement and you ask for somebody, basically you want to ask for the stars, ask for the superstars in your job postings. Because if you make an advertisement, you say, okay, this is a $20,000 a year job plus commission, you're going to get people who consider themselves worth $24,000. Okay, you're going to get the lowest people. Now, if you take that same ad and you say, hey, listen, if you're hardworking and you're willing to do what it takes, you will make 80 grand your first year, 120 by your second year. And, you know, you don't want to say something that's not true. It's, you know, you just want to take the best possible case scenario. And what you'll get is you'll get the better people are going to gravitate to that, because all those people who consider themselves to be worth $25,000 a year, they're not even going to apply to that $80,000 job. But the $80,000 job, it is going to appeal to people who are trying to make $80,000, who should hopefully be the better types of people. So that was number 25. I'm going to have a link in the show notes at insurancesplash.com/21, where you can see this whole list. So you don't have to write anything down. You can get a reminder of everything that I talked about here. But I think there's a lot of good tips. And I want you to bear in mind here that if you're to look at your agency between today and 10 years from now, if there's one factor that will determine whether you're bigger than you are now, whether you're smaller than you are, whether you're open or whether you're closed, it's the ability to hire the best people. I promise you that is so true. So take all of these little tips, all everything I've given you here, take it in, absorb it, try to learn more, read more, and be hiring for superstars all the time. It'll make your job, your life, everything about your agency so much better. So if you got an idea out of this podcast and you want to say thanks, the best way to do it, go out to iTunes and write a 5-star review of this podcast. It helps me get more exposure to more agents in the iTunes store. Also, if you know another agent, especially maybe somebody that spends a lot of time in the car, or somebody who, you know, is just kind of always looking for more ideas of how they can improve their agency, and they would be interested in listening to a podcast, let them know about this. I would definitely appreciate it. So that's all I got. Have a great day. Sell insurance. Sell as much insurance as you can. Sell the right coverage to the right people. And I guess the rest is history. Have a great day. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to Insurance Marketing with John Carroll, brought to you by InsuranceSplash.com. Now get out there and sell insurance.